Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Scary Stories for the Soul. Art is meant to evoke something inside of you. It's meant to stir up emotions and feelings, whether they be anger or sadness or glee. Art is not simply meant to be viewed. It's meant to be consumed. I remember the first time I saw Francisco Goya's black paintings. Even on the fluorescent projector of my art history class, I could tell that I was looking at something dark, something twisted. Goya originally painted the series, known in Spanish as Pinturas Negras, while he was living alone in Madrid. After having survived two near-fatal illnesses, witnessing the Napoleonic Wars, and surviving a government that was constantly in turmoil, Goya was left with extreme feelings of panic, anxiety, depression, and fear. Between 1819 and 1823, Goya painted the black paintings as murals around the home to symbolize the constant anguish that he was in. And looking at them now, it's impossible not to feel that same anguish. As haunting as the black paintings are, there's no indication that the paintings themselves are actually haunted, although it is hard to imagine them being squeaky clean after all the emotion that Goya poured into them. But there are certain paintings that are linked to supernatural activity, paintings that are not simply paint or oil on canvas, and there are even some that have blood and gore mixed right into their composition. The Anguished Man itself is not a painting that would evoke too many raised eyebrows. It's not the prettiest thing to look at, the main center point of the piece being a red and orange figure with no eyes, yowling as if it were in pain. And the blue-black backdrop does very little to evoke anything other than uncomfortability. But aside from the fact that it's incredibly creepy, one could look at the Anguished Man for a few minutes and then walk away, thankful that the experience is over. Yet the owner of the painting, Sean Robinson from Cumbria, England, has far more disturbing stories of the Anguished Man painting that add to our collective curiosity surrounding it. According to Robinson, the origins of the painting are unclear. Its creator, an unknown artist that has never come forward to claim their work. Robinson inherited the painting from his grandmother, who claimed that the artist had poured his own blood into the paints, used the paint to create the piece, and then tragically committed suicide. Robinson spent a few days with the painting in his home before strange things began to happen. Cries and moans could be heard originating from the painting in the dead of night. If Robinson were to pass by the painting at night, the eyeless sockets would move and follow him before promptly assuming their regular position upon inspection. But the worst of it was when he began to be visited by the specter of a lanky man, decrepit and doubled over in pain at the foot of his bed every other night. Although Robinson admits to never really getting a good look at it, the red and orange skin was a dead giveaway that it was the subject of the painting coming to pay him a visit. Robinson debated for many years on whether or not to get rid of the painting. Inheritance be damned, he couldn't take being haunted by whoever or whatever the painting had immortalized. But he eventually decided against it, realizing that if the painting could haunt him, it could haunt whoever else came into possession of it. Instead, he decided to share his story with members of the paranormal community, hoping to either find answers or advice on how to deal with what was happening to him. Unfortunately, that search for answers also resulted in the duplication of the Anguished Man. In an interview given to the website Dead Central, Robinson was quoted as saying, quote, "All other paintings appearing for sale online which claim to be the anguished man are frauds, and no one should buy those. I can guarantee you that the original haunted painting is locked away in a secure location, and I have no intention of selling it. It could be dangerous, and it would not be wise for anyone to lay their hands on the painting, because it really is active, and really strange things happen for people who are in the same room, or even the same house, as the painting." Haunted paintings are not a novelty, especially when you consider how much emotion the artists pour into their work. Another example of this is the undated portrait Mi Novia, painted by Filipino artist Juan Luna de San Pedro y Novicio Ancheta. According to legend, Luna was painting Mi Novia while suspecting his wife, Maria de la Paz Padro de Tavera, of infidelity. The subject of the painting is both a combination of Paz Padro and his favorite model, Angela Duce. Luna's consistent jealousy and frequent unfounded accusations against his wife, Paz Padro, were well known within his family and friends. Any man that even so much as looked at Paz Padro was immediately a suspect in Luna's eyes. On September 22, 1892, while finishing up the painting, Luna's jealousy overcame him. He shot down the door that Paz Padro was standing behind and killed her and his mother-in-law, while also wounding Paz Padro's brother Felix. While Luna was arrested, he was eventually acquitted of all charges. The temporary insanity plea entered in by his lawyer played right into the laws set at the time, labeling the crime a, quote, "crime of passion." The unwritten law at the time forgave men for killing unfaithful wives, unquote. Luna eventually died in 1899, never really facing any serious consequences for killing Paz Padro and her mother. And it is this miscarriage of justice that has prompted many to believe that the spirit of Paz Padro haunts the painting even to this day. Past owners of Mi Novia have been rocked with misfortune. Previous owners have reportedly died in car crashes or have even been forced into bankruptcy. Expectant mothers have supposedly suffered miscarriages or extreme pain when walking by or looking at the painting for too long, while other spectators report feeling physical pain in the same areas where Paz Padro was shot. During the 1987 opening night of the Metropolitan Museum of Art's exhibition of the painting, the light bulb atop of Mi Novia shattered in front of hundreds of onlookers, showering them with glass. While there are those in the art community who swear by the painting's not haunted status, there are those who say that the feeling of pain, anger, and dread that one feels when simply looking at the painting cannot be described as anything else. Perhaps Paz Padro is there, staring back at us from the canvas, forcing us to feel the hurt and pain that she felt after meeting such a tragic and untimely end. Emotions fuel art. From painters to musicians to sculptors and writers, emotions, whether the good or the bad, push artists to create some of their best work. Edvard Munch, creator of another infamously haunted painting entitled Death and the Child, which depicts a small girl covering her ears while their dead mother is painted behind them, was even specifically instructed by his mentor, Hans Jaeger, to paint his emotional and psychological state. Both Munch's mother and sister had previously died of tuberculosis, and this distinctive painting style, known as soul painting, helped him immortalize and personify the trauma that he felt each and every day. Whereas the expressionist movement of art was often categorized as emphasizing positivism, soul painting leaned into trauma, angst, anguish, and pain. It's no wonder that many of the paintings that emerged from this era are considered to be haunted today. Edgar Allan Poe once wrote, "Words have no power to impress the mind without the exquisite horror of their reality." Stories, paintings, movies, and music cannot leave a lasting impression on us without reaching into that part of our minds, our souls, that allow us to feel grief, joy, sadness, or even madness. Perhaps that is why those lost souls that have been trapped within the paint and oil and charcoal of a canvas have lasted such a visceral impression on us. Perhaps that's why artists pour their literal blood, sweat, and tears into their art. Because they want us to look at their art and feel them. Really feel them. This is an exquisite reminder that a painting is never just a painting. The painted eyes that we look into might just be looking back at us as well. Scary Stories for the Soul presents Untitled, Blood and Oil on Canvas. Julia had always wanted to work in an art gallery. When she was 6 years old, her parents took her to an exhibition of Frida Kahlo's work at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and she was not only fascinated with the work itself, but also with the woman who led the tour group and knew everything about everything. With her smart suit and clear, confident voice, the woman who introduced herself as the curator knew what the paintings were made of, when and where they were painted, and even Kahlo's reported state of mind and inspiration for many of the pieces. From that moment on, Julia knew that that was what she wanted to be, a curator of fantastic and beautiful artwork. And after 7 years of art school, she had finally made it. She was standing in the acquisitions room of the Fielding Art Gallery in Soho, New York, ready to work. It was only her first month there, and she was eager to prove herself. Movers carefully dropped off the last of the pieces set for their Friday exhibition, only 2 days away, and she was busy cataloging and categorizing everything. When the last of the inventory had been counted, she noticed that there was one extra painting than expected. The black, almost scorched-looking wooden box stood out like a sore thumb in the clean, cold room. "Excuse me?" Julia asked the lead worker. "This one isn't in my inventory sheet." The already eager-to-leave mover looked over her sheet and compared it to his. The painting was indeed an extra on both their inventory lists, but the man didn't seem to care much. "I don't know what to tell you. It was in the truck." Julia looked around, nervous. She didn't want to mess anything up, but there was no one around to help her out. "Can't you just take it back?" she asked the man, who was already walking back to his truck. "Nope, that's not how it works," he told her without so much as looking behind his shoulder. "I can't keep it here," Julia insisted. "I'm not taking it back," the man said, and promptly got in his truck and drove off. Well, shit, Julia thought, biting on her thumbnail. What was she supposed to do now? If it wasn't a part of the collection, she couldn't exactly add it to the exhibition. It would throw everything off, and throw their credibility as an established art studio into question. Julia walked over to the wooden box and inspected it. It did indeed look almost scorched, as if the box itself had caught fire and then was quickly extinguished. She slid some gloves on and opened the cover, pulling the painting out and setting it down with extreme caution. The portrait itself was radical compared to the rest of the exhibition pieces, a series of landscapes portraying the French countryside. A small child stood in the middle of the painting in a clearing, a stone well behind her. Small red handprints dotted the gray stones of the well, and a trickle of red dribbled from the subject's nose. In the trees in the distance of the painting, red and orange torch flames were painted, as if a large group of someones was approaching. Julia examined the painting, aware of the feeling of dread that had suddenly swept over her. She trailed a gloved finger over the red dribble of supposed blood coming from the girl's nose while examining the tag that had been attached to a notch in the dark frame. Untitled, the tag read, 1892. Julia flipped over the tag, unable to stop caressing the red dribble of blood. In letters written much more hastily than the name and date of creation was the line, "Wooden frame, blood and oil on canvas." Julia lurched her hand away from the painting and backed into a stack of frames. She hastily removed her gloves and threw them into the nearest waste basket while holding down the bile that rose in her throat. Blood and oil on canvas. That couldn't be literal, could it? Immediately, she called James, the head curator of the museum, and insisted he inspect the painting. Using the lope he always had on a thread around his neck, James studied the painting, his expression placid. "Well?" Julia asked. "It surely does look like blood." "Are you serious?" she gasped. "Well, we won't know for sure unless we take a sample and get it analyzed. But since we don't even know how or why it got here, I'm hesitant to touch it at all. But from the looks of the color and the way it combines with the others, and the way it manipulates the artist's brushstrokes, I would say it looks like blood to me." "That is absolutely vile," Julia said, instinctually taking a step back. "You would be surprised how many artists had a habit of using blood in their art. It's not an entirely uncommon practice." "Off-putting, yes, but not uncommon." "What should we do with it?" James cleaned his lope and took a calculated step back from the painting as well. "Let me contact the gallery that the shipment is on loan from. There is no reason why they should have added it to the exhibition pieces without informing us. And the fact that it's not on the manifest is sloppy work at best. Until then, keep it down here. Under no circumstances can it be shown." Even if it was, by some odd chance, a part of the ensemble, Julia would never have shown the painting. The more she looked at it, the more she wanted to kick in the canvas. It was the child's eyes, the way her black pupils consumed her irises and made Julia feel as though she was staring into an endless pit of nothingness. And the trickle of blood, so stark compared to the morose and melancholy colors of her surroundings. Julia knew that she would have been a part of that crowd, looming in the distance, just getting ready to capture her. She shook her head, erasing the images. How did she know that the torchlights, vaguely painted into the background, were people coming to take that child? Why would she project that onto the painting? The almost iridescent eyelids painted to the girl twitched, partially blinking. Julia jumped backwards and rubbed her own eyes. It moved! The girl moved! She was about to call for James when she realized what she was about to shout out loud. The painting moved? The painting moved. No, it had not. She was clearly stressed and anxious about the exhibition. She hadn't had a restful night's sleep in over a week, and now she was letting her tired mind take control of her withering senses. No, the painting had not moved. Putting her gloves back on, she placed the painting back into its container and left the room. That night, she dreamt of an angry mob, a grieving mother, and a child that was not actually a child. The following day, Julia found the painting out of its box, reclined against a stack of empty storage containers. Instantly angry, she gathered the warehouse staff and pointed at the painting. "Who removed this from its box?" she asked. No one answered, although everyone exchanged confused looks. "I asked a question. Who removed this from its box?" she asked again more angrily. The warehouse foreman stepped forward. "None of my staff did this. It was like that when I arrived at 5 a.m. this morning. It was already out." "Don't lie to me, Alfred," Julia shrieked. "I put it back myself." Alfred crossed his arms. "Now listen here. You are not going to raise your voice at me or accuse my staff of anything. It was like this when I got here. If you want to come review the security tapes, you can do that yourself. Until then, we're getting back to work." Julia couldn't explain why she couldn't rein herself in. In a shrill voice she didn't recognize, she said, "Oh, I am going to review the tapes!" and stormed out of the warehouse. Julia watched the warehouse security tape with James and Alfred close behind her. And there, in plain sight, was Alfred arriving for his morning shift, the untitled painting out of its box and on display. That's not possible," Julia remarked. I put it away myself." "Obviously, you didn't," Alfred said coldly, walking out of the office. "Julia, what's going on?" James asked. I don't know. I must have thought I put it away. But I remember doing it." James patted her shoulder. "Maybe you should let someone else lead the exhibit tomorrow. This might be too much too soon." Ice washed over her senses. "No! No, I'm fine. It was a mistake. I'll go and apologize to Alfred and his staff. It's honestly fine. I'm fine." And she ran back into the warehouse before he had the chance to say anything else. All day, Julia obsessed over the painting. She daydreamed of being a part of that angry mob. She heard the faint sobs of a grieving mother. She imagined those bloody handprints on the cold stone well. And she imagined the girl, who wasn't a girl. Not really. It was a mask. A mask meant to disguise her true, hideous form. Julia found herself walking by the painting several times throughout the day. She would stop and stare at it for minutes on end, lost in the child's eyes. She studied it, as it studied her. And every time she walked away, she could swear that it would follow her. An imperceptible shift of the small child's neck. A fast blink. A flick of its little fingers. And the torches in the background, they seemed to be getting closer. "Good," Julia found herself thinking. "Come and get her." Eventually, Alfred had to move her away, claiming that she was stopping them from doing their work. Julia begrudgingly walked away back to her office, but not before catching the girl's eyes shift. It watched her walk away. Julia didn't wait for James to call the gallery that the pieces were on loan from. She wanted answers, and she wanted them now. She was seeing things, hearing things. All she wanted to do was look at that painting. Rage consumed her every moment. She had spent the majority of the day yelling and picking on the staff, and then going back to stare at the painting some more. She needed to know who the painting belonged to and why they had sent it to her before she completely lost her mind. Quickly introducing herself to the museum's curator, She told the voice on the other side of the phone about the painting and how it had arrived with the others, with no real evidence of its existence. It was not on the manifest, and the truck driver, who had been less than helpful in helping her determine its origins, really didn't say anything. The curator, while confused about the call, was helpful and informed her that he would get to the bottom of it and call her back tomorrow with answers. Unhappy, but willing to rein in her unexpected anger for the sake of her budding art reputation, Julia thanked him and hung up. Seconds later, the phone rang again. When she answered, all she heard was heavy breathing on the other end. "Hello?" she asked the voice on the phone. After a few seconds of more breathing, the voice asked, "Did you touch it?" Julia shivered away the cold finger that traced her spine. "I'm sorry?" "Did you touch it?" the voice asked her again. "Did you touch the blood?" Julia wheezed. "Yes. Blood and oil on canvas," the voice on the phone responded flatly. "It knows you now. I'm sorry I sent it to you. It was the only way. She knew me too. I couldn't take it anymore." "How do I get rid of it?" Julia asked. "You can't destroy her," the voice told her. "You can only send her away. But she'll hunt someone else. That will be on your conscience. You have to decide." The line went dead. Julia stared at the receiver, not knowing what to do. Could she pass this on to someone else? It was passed on to her without regret. Why couldn't she do the same? Because of the nightmares. She knew that. Those horrible daydreams that had plagued her since touching the painting. Even with a gloved hand, it had latched onto her. Could she put someone else through that? Julia ran down to the warehouse, and when no one was looking, she took the painting and brought it to the back lot of the museum. Dropping it down onto the floor as if it were a monster with teeth, she poured a canister of oil over it and set it on fire. No, she couldn't put someone else through that. But the canvas wouldn't burn. Julia watched as she poured more and more oil onto the painting until it leaked out and pooled around her shoes. But it wouldn't burn. The flames that warmed her too cold skin danced around the canvas, but did no actual damage. Suddenly, a gust of wind swept past her, and the flames immediately died. The painting laid in pristine condition on the dirty ground. No torch marks, no burns, not even the oil that she had poured onto it soaked through the canvas. And the face of the child? The child that was not actually a child, smiled up at her. Julia swallowed her fear and brought the painting back to the warehouse. She slid it back into its charred container, making sure it was facing away from her. "Alfred, where's this truck going to?" she asked the foreman, making sure to steady her voice. "Cumbria," he responded, his tone still clipped from their altercation that morning. "Why?" "This piece is going with you," she lied. "It's not on the manifest," he noted, flipping through his list. "Yeah, it didn't come with paperwork, so we had to call the gallery and authorize it via phone call." "Does James know about this?" he asked. Julia took a deep breath and willed her body to stop shaking. She turned to look at him and put on her best nonchalant smile. "No, I made the decision. It's my first call as curator. They really wanted it, and since we were never supposed to have it, I didn't think it would be a problem to just hand it over. James looked at her confused, but the truck driver called out to him from the cab. If they didn't leave now, they would miss the delivery window. "You guys better go," Julia insisted. "You'll be late." James took the black box and carefully placed it in his truck. He gave Julia one last quizzical look and then indicated to his truck driver to go. Julia watched the painting leave, the sense of anger and dread that had been plaguing her for too long fading away the farther the truck got from her eyesight. It was 3 weeks later that Julia heard the terrible news. The gallery in Cumbria that the painting had been shipped to had burned to the ground. The museum curator had gone completely mad, breaking into the museum in the middle of the night and setting himself and the place on fire. They were still assessing the damage, though there was little to be saved. Julia joined her co-workers in questioning what could have possibly possessed such a professional and esteemed member of the artistic community to do such a thing. But deep down, she knew. Julia knew why. She knew what had driven him to do it. And she felt no shock when it was announced that one painting, only one, had survived. Listen and rate Scary Stories for the Soul on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or wherever you listen in. Don't forget to follow Scary Stories for the Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Threads. And if you have any legends, myths, or ghost stories you want to see covered on the show, email your ideas to scarystoriesforthesoul2020@gmail.com. This is Isabel Cortez. Until next time.